This is your Frederick Real Estate Update, a conversation about the regional real estate market with tips for buyers and sellers. Your hosts, RE/MAX Results' Darren Ahern and Presidential Bank Mortgage's Terry Kernan.
And it's an absolute gorgeous house. And so we just put that in coming soon status yesterday for $565,000. And so we're going to have that.
That's a very reasonable.
Oh, yeah. We're going to get a lot of showings.
I think
and
so.
For anybody that has little children that loves the idea of a cul-de-sac location where their children are much safer and almost no cars come back there. The one thing the home does have, Terry, that I thought was a little interesting, because it has the farm and it has a little bit of a low-lying area right outside of it, it does have what we call the level one flood insurance. It's $530 per year they've been paying.
Okay.
But if the water ever got up to that house and got in the basement, that would be a monsoon, like hurricane, like you can't imagine. It would basically be another Hurricane Sandy, if not worse, to get up to that level. So not too overly concerned as far as that, but I do always want to make mention, you know, when someone says, how do I know if my home or a home I'm purchasing is questionable to be in a flood insurance area that's required, those FEMA flood maps did move, and we have means to look on the websites to be able to determine what is that requirement for that. And those, that's not really all that high of a price for flood insurance. It's when you start getting into the $3,000 and $4,000 per year above your typical home insurance already that it becomes kind of catastrophic. And those are places that are primarily sitting like on Dublin Road that are like, you know, they could potentially be in that zone depending on where it is that you could be, you know, where if the Monocacy River ever over flooded, it's game over, right?
Right.
So, and I do actually have someone down on English Muffin Way that lives off of there, believe it or not, behind there. There are homes that are right on the Monocacy. And, but they sit so far away, you wouldn't think the level of water, even if it came up, say, 20 feet, would it even be able to get to those homes. And so, but this home has that level one, which is the lowest line level, like, you know, for flood insurance purposes. And I can't even see it ever happening because there's no stream there. There's nothing. It's just a low-lying area that's right off of this farm. So, yeah.
So let's just talk real quick about flood insurance, because mm-hmm. when you talk about flood insurance, that's people start to hear, my new house is going to flood, my new house is going to flood. You're saying low level one, $500 and some
yeah.
a year. That is not bad. But let me tell you, the easiest thing to do when it comes to buying a house with flood insurance is to talk to the current sellers, and you can assume that policy.
Exactly.
Okay?
Yep.
Because to determine what level you're in, they have to do such things as a survey, an mm-hmm. elevation survey to
right.
see where you are, and it can cost a couple $1,000s, and then you figure out you're in this level. And assume the person's insurance that is currently living there.
Yeah, okay? Absolutely.
That's the bottom line. It's mandated by the federal government.
Mm-hmm.
You can't really shop flood insurance. So that's the easiest thing to do. So when somebody does come in to talk about that home, just let them know that that insurance is assumable.
Yeah.
Very important.
Yeah. So nice place. We're going to have an open house coming up after, I guess, next week. Yeah. Because we're going to come live. We're doing photos and then we'll go live. And then we'll next Saturday, right after the program, we'll be doing an open house. And I'll be giving away a $50. Anybody that comes by, we're going to give away a $50 gift card to Sheets Gas Station just to say thanks for coming by. So it's 1825 Tuscarora Creek, right here in Frederick. So let me know.
Okay.
All right, let's get into the other numbers here. Under contract, 475 homes under contract, brand new builds, 177, and 298 resale homes with an average time of those is 7 days on the market. Last 30 days of sold homes, 260. So this is what is the real proof, Terry, that we are just really gridlocked out. More than ever before, and we're going to talk about the rates going up this last week and what are some of the things that have contributed to that, and are we ever going to see any relief of some of this stuff at all to start to get more inventory out there. 260 homes in the last 30 days, 221 were resales, and then $560,000 was the single family home resale average price point. And so that's coming up just a tiny bit, and the list sold ratio's hovering right at like 100% still. I think that's going to change a little bit. I'm hearing a lot more agents that are saying, hey, like I heard one this morning, they said, hey, we got a beautiful townhouse here that's, you know, 3-bedroom, 2.5 bath, and $315,000 for sale here in Frederick. And, you know, we only got 2 showings this weekend.
That's it.
Yeah. And so that caused my eyebrows to go up, because I'm thinking a month ago, well, 2 months ago, you'd had 20 showings, I guarantee. In fact, I got a buyer for that. So I think that we are, I know for the spring market, if you will, definitely seeing a lot less buyer demand in general overall in some regard. But inventory is still staying relatively low for everything, and that's the only thing that's the saving grace to the prices right now. But I am definitely starting to see a little bit more activity this last week. I paid attention to that quite a bit to see how many home price reductions, and it's so true. It is like night and day. If you do not get an offer in the first week, you will be making a price adjustment. I mean, the chances of that's going to be astronomical. I think especially after this week and what we've seen a little bit in some of those numbers. So that's what I'm kind of seeing right now. That's the trend a little bit.
All right.
In that regard. So, all right, let's talk about that. Anybody want to call in 301-694-9363? Let us know. Tara and I want to know how many homes are active for sale in Frederick County right now. If you're within 5 up or down, I'm going to give you a $100 gift card to Lowe's or Home Depot. All right, Tara, let's talk about rates. What in the world happened this last week?
So last week when we were on the show, we talked about the unemployment figures, okay? And the unemployment figures came in higher. And I said, what's going to happen is we got to really look at the CPI, which was coming out Wednesday, Consumer Price Index, the Producer Price Index coming out on Thursday. That was going to kind of gear where rates are going. So what has happened is each month we kind of have are in a wait and see. So there's not a lot of activity as far as movement and rates between the second week of the month to the first week of the following month. There's not a lot of activity. It's all anticipation about three numbers. Number one, the unemployment rate. Okay, so we saw that improve. Number two, the CPI, the Consumer Price Index. This is the number that people are willing to pay for goods. Okay, this is the number one inflation number. So what happened was they basically were estimating at a 0.2% increase, and it was at 0.4%. Okay, that blew the rates out of the water, and basically our rates jumped to over 7%, and now we're stuck looking at it, and everybody's looking at each other going, wow, I didn't see that coming. And my question to these smart people that come up with these numbers of a 0.2, this is what we're expecting, 0.3, and then it comes in at 0.4 is, look at the cost of gas. Up 19%. Of course we're going to have bad inflation numbers. Of course we're going to have bad inflation numbers if the cost of gas keeps rising. So PPI comes out, the producer price index, and that was expected to be at a 0.3, and it came in at 0.2. Okay, so that was good. So that kind of gave us a little bit of a breather. If that number came in at 0.4 as well, we probably would have seen prices get worse. But what happened on Friday? Things settled down. We got a little bit better. We recovered some of the losses on Wednesday. Wednesday was one of the worst days in the market that we've seen in a long, long time. And I'm talking years, okay?
Yeah.
So it was one of the worst days, but we did recover a little bit on Friday. I think it's going to move forward. Now let's talk about why inflation, and this is the school of thought from Terry Kernan. This is my own feeling, is one of the things that we saw this week was inflation coming down in Europe.
Okay.
Inflation is coming down in Europe. Inflation is continuing to be strong in the United States. Let's think about what differs us between Europe. Okay, and let's see if there's any correlation. At the end of 2023, we had $1.13 trillion in credit card debt. Okay.
All right.
At the beginning of 2023, we had about $920 billion. So it's going up at 20% a year. But let's look at some other factors. HELOCs, last quarter of 2023, they went up $11 billion in balances. Okay, that's a huge number. So right now we have $360 billion on people's homes that are HELOCs. Those HELOCs, a lot of times, and that's what's outstanding balances. So last quarter, $50 billion increase in credit card debt. Okay, so that's going up at about 5% a quarter, which 20% a year.
Wow.
That's huge. So what's happening is, you know, currently the United States as a whole has over $5 trillion in consumer debt. Now that's student loans, car loans, credit cards. That is not HELOC mortgages. First mortgages, okay?
Right.
So what I believe is happening is the reason we keep fueling this inflation is because we don't care what anything costs as an American. We are basically going to get it no matter what the cost at this point in time. We are adding so much debt to the bottom line that it is outrageous. Europe has about half the debt per household on a credit card that we do. Okay, so let's talk about savings. At the end of in 2021, savings was August of 2021. As a whole, we had $2.1 trillion in savings. At the end of 2023, that had dropped to $190 billion in savings. That's almost $2 trillion.
Wow.
It's $1.9 trillion we lost in savings in three years, let's say. So we're not going to get inflation under control until we can get the gas prices under control, until we can get people to stop putting everything on their credit card. Until that happens, I think inflation is still going to hover in the 3 to 4% range until something happens. Europe, it's being tamed. It's being, you know, the flame has gotten a lot lower in Europe. You're starting to see where they're going to start cutting rates in Europe. But we don't have the ability to do that here because we're not controlling our debt under control. So that's kind of what's happening. And what that does is that pops up the interest rates. That keeps the interest rates. Everybody goes, well, I want 6%. Well, we're not going to get there until we can get our spending under control.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And getting some gas prices lower will also help. That's pushing the number up as well.
Yeah.
And I didn't mean to go too much into this, but when you look at these numbers, Darren, it's crazy what we spend on our credit cards, on our HELOCs. It's outrageous what's going on.
Yeah, and that's why, you know, for people's personal lives, obviously, you know, think about it. Just imagine what life would look like for you. And a lot of people are being, I think, probably more forced this than ever. It's just stop spending. Stop going out and eating so much or buying this or that or put all these things on hold a little bit to get rebalanced and focused. And especially the biggest thing is to build up an emergency fund and savings, which is really smart to do considering. I just had a friend of mine just lost his job, you know, this last week. And he says, man, thank God I have a lot of savings right now. If I didn't have all this savings, 6 months of savings, I'd be really maybe in bad shape. And I said, absolutely. That's why that is a golden number to have is 6 months of a salary in an account. So, all righty, let's keep going, moving along here. One of the big things, Terry, I think this is starting a little bit now more than ever. A lot of sellers out there are starting to learn that we're not getting the amount of showings that we're getting. You're not getting the amount of multiple offers, and buyers are just not able to afford to continue to go up $20,000, $30,000, $50,000, $100,000 as a whole with asking prices on these asking prices of homes. I think we're going to see a leveling out. I think it would be a good thing. I've been thinking, you know, maybe a 5 or a 10% correction to get things more in line with buyers and affordability and all that. Probably wouldn't be such a bad thing considering how high. One particular home I've been working on that I want to make a notation of that I'm glad to be able to do this a lot deeper on properties that the reason why I did it on a deeper level is because there's no data. There's no data. It's out in Western Maryland. And so therefore the problem is when you have a severe lack of same type sales, you get kind of forced out of this box that says, okay, now we got to start doing more heavier weight within what is known as a cost approach method to the property. I've done that with, you know, we don't even have to do cost approaches almost at all whenever you have a cookie cutter home that is in a community like Kingsbrook or Villages Urbana or something like that, where I have 15 sales in the last 2 months or 3 months. And it's like, well, that's the market. That's exactly what an appraiser is going to use. This is what an underwriter is going to love to look at. And it's very easy. It's just easy because all you have are a few bedroom or bath adjustments, a little bit of square foot adjustments. Most of the age of the homes are relatively the same. You know, you don't have a widespread with all that. This particular property, I helped my friends buy the home 7 years ago. And the nice part is I was able to do some really deep research outside of our area a little bit to say, okay, what's been the trend also? How much has the market appreciated in this particular area in the last 7 years? And that number came out to be about 53%. So that is amazing growth because in any normal real estate market, it's about double the growth because in any real estate market, it would have typically taken about 12 to 15 years to be able to do that, to be able to double up like that. And so as we've started to go through these things, one of the big things that caught my attention more than anything else is the thing that I've always warned people about. Again, look at Zillow and Redfin and Remax and Home.com and Realtor.com. There's about 8 sites out there that play in the sandbox of home evaluations. And the thing that gets me is that, if you've ever done this with your home, the amount of spread that they give to each value of property, and then the amount of difference that each one provides in their algorithms, is actually, in my opinion, it's just mind-blowing.
Mm-hmm.
The reason why it's mind-blowing is because we're not looking at numbers that are a percentage, I should say, that's like, oh, everybody's within 3%. I personally don't think they have any business being in that sandbox at all, because the numbers don't reflect a lot of items like condition. It doesn't take into account exact locationally, although they may try, and that's fine. And it doesn't take into a condition, which is huge. Like I said, that could be 10 or 20% of a home's value, just like that, based on the condition and upgrades and the things that someone's done to maintain the value of their home, putting money into it, be it new roof, HVAC, and big ticket items and things like that, which brings up the standard of it to be almost like more of a new home, if you will. Even though the wood and the drywall and everything may be 20 years old, if somebody has a brand new roof, a new HVAC, and new hot water tank and all these big ticket items, you scratch off a lot of years that normally that depreciative thing would do to the property. So here's what I want to go back to. There's three different methods, three things that we look at primarily. Number one, if there's no comparable properties, get into a cost approach becomes very, also a little, can be a little subjective in the sense of, it's a little more integral, if you will, because what you have to do is you have to break out the land, and this property is 25 acres of land. And what interesting to me is this property is not on the lake. It's 10 minutes from Deep Creek Lake, 25 acres of land. And so that land in and of itself, to sell just that parcel of land, has a value to that if it's buildable and it has, you know, it's PERC approved and it's got, you know, a well on it and that guesswork's been taken out, which it has been. And then you have a property that is 1 acre. 9 out of 10 properties on the lake are, you know, basically 1 acre lots and less. Now, on the lake, because of location, 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 a vacant property on the lake, you know, vacant piece of land, which there's almost none really, but if there is, you know, that could easily be $500,000 for that piece of land.
It's incredible.
Yeah, you could pay $500,000 to be able to build your dream house on the lake, okay? Now, off of the lake, you would think, well, this 25 acres, even though it's not on the lakefront, it's got to be at least that much. It's not. It's the first buildable acre has a value, and then the other additional 24, 25 acres holds another value on there based on a lot of factors. I had come up with about $375,000. That's about how much that piece of 25, 26 acres would sell for. And then you take this house that's almost 8,000 square feet, and it's got the basement, and then you got a carriage house that's almost 3,000 square feet. That basically is like another living quarters, and then you get into the gross living area and then the finished basement, unfinished parts. Then you got garages, you know, you got 4 garages, and then you got heated driveway. How much is a heated driveway to put in? It's $100,000 or more, wow. Right? So you start to add up all these line items that you break everything out, hardscapes, and if it's got built-in fireplace type entertainment living area outside and patio areas and things, which it does. And you start to really take into account, like, you know, all the construction and the quality and its custom home. You start to really get into the GLA, and I was getting into, you know, we're looking at like 200, you know, to rebuild this home today.
GLA?
Yeah, the GLA, gross living area.
Okay. Right. Just want to make sure everybody knows.
So when I get into that number, you know, I realized, okay, to rebuild this home, it would be literally over $300 a square foot.
Okay.
Now, on a resale, the home
being...
That's
$2.5 million-ish.
Yeah, so you're looking into that range. So at the end of the day, we come up with a value for a cost approach, and I've done that. Here's the one thing I really want to share that gets to be really wild. A lot of people put so much weight on these third-party vendors, the Zillows, the Redfins, even our Remax and Homes.com, Real.com, and all these of the world. They can do their best job possible, but here's where it showed itself to be like, wow. Zillow puts this home at $1.935 million.
Okay. Where does Darren put it?
Yeah, that's where I'm going to get to. What's the range? We can never get a number. Redfin was the highest at $2.697 million. 2.7.
Okay.
Okay, so, and then Remax, ours was 2.439. Homes.com was 2.457. Realtor.com was 2.421. So here's what I think is really funny about it at the end of the day. You have an $800,000 differential. Do you see a problem with that?
At that size of a house, I could see where the $800,000 differential is because of the size of the house and the value. So I'm not too shocked at that differential.
Okay.
Because of the size of the house.
Right.
8,000 square feet.
So whittling it back from dollar amounts, you get into percentages. And so anytime you start getting, like, say, a 10-20% spread of an evaluation number, that becomes pretty wild in any stretch. 10% or higher, because I would never list a house and say to a seller, hey, look, this number here, this number, this, that. What do you guys think? Do you want to go 10% higher just because this number says it? That would never be a good pricing strategy ever, on no matter what price point of the home that is, whether it's $100,000 or whether it's $30 million. That would just be really crazy. The thing that whittled it out from, for me, that took it away from these third-party valuations is no doubt the cost approach, which came in right around $2.1 million.
Okay.
Okay, taking all things into a factor. Now, there is a little bit of a spread as far as, like, you know, how subjective is that number in that regard. So here's the thing that I came into, and I said, look, based on a trend, it should probably be right around $2.3 million based on what the market performance has been, which is very factual in the last 7 years. We have those numbers. It came in right about $2.3 million. Okay. So I thought, well, the good news is there's three of these valuation companies that are very close to that, like real close, which is really good. So if you take out the low, the high, and you do the median range thing, it actually then starts to make a lot more sense than ever. So that's one of those misnomers. That's one of those things that people ask all the time. And, of course, these sellers saying, well, how accurate are these? And I said, well, at the end of the day, I can give you a range. And I said, look, you're probably going to be between 2.2, 2.4 million or whatever. But you got to have a good pricing strategy to be able to adjust if you don't get an offer. Because here's the bottom line. The market will never lie. And the market will always tell us what it's truly worth. So we're going to see a lot more of this having to be done with the market changes coming up, I can promise you. And you better make sure you have a good agent who knows what they're doing with it. All right, guys, have a great weekend. Happy buying and selling, and we will see you next week. Take care now.
It's Meg Galler with Community Title Network. Experience close to home. Community Title Network is the most trusted title and settlement partner for real estate professionals, buyers, and sellers. Our team is comprised of the most skilled and experienced underwriters in our region to ensure your rights are secured as an owner or as a lender. We combine that with our skilled and experienced attorneys, settlement agents, and processing staff who ensure a smooth closing experience. Our Frederick office is conveniently located along Carroll Creek in downtown Frederick. For your next settlement, give Community Title Network a call. We're at 301-304-6620. At Community Title Network, we challenge the norm. Where good is the benchmark for many, we aim for greatness.
Hello, this is Terry Kernan with Presidential Bank Mortgage in downtown Frederick. And the best way to reach me always is on my cell phone at 301-639-9244, 301-639-9244, or you can always email me at tkernan@presidential.com.
And this is Darren Ahern from RE/MAX Results. You can reach me anytime, 240-344-1713. Again, it's 240-344-1713, or at darrenahern@gmail.com. Thanks so much for tuning in to your Frederick Real Estate Update. We will see you each and every Saturday right here on WFMD at 11 o'clock.
Past editions of this program are available in the audio vault at WFMD.com.